Welcome to the Nintendo Fusion Podcast, a podcast that fuses past, present, and future Nintendo thought. I'm David, accompanied by my friend, Jordan.
We are squids now. We're going to be talking about the Splatoon 3 today. So last weekend was the Splatfest, and also there was a direct not too much before that. So we have some thoughts on Splatoon to chat about. On top of that, there's been some discussion online whether or not Splatoon 3 even warrants a sequel, or if this is even like the correct approach for how Splatoon should go forward. So David, I heard you played the Splatfest, or...
Yeah, I did play the Splatfest. I believe they called it the Splatfest World Premiere, and it was kind of fun. They did this for Splatoon 2 as well, which is pretty cool because this was like back on the first year of the Nintendo Switch, where you just downloaded basically a demo of the game that had stripped out all of the single player content and locked your ability to progress so that you could go into the lobbies and play. And that's exactly what they did with Splatoon 3 with the Splatfest World Premiere. Honestly, I think it was a really fun time. It was really fun to play in a Splatfest again. I actually managed to play all of them back in Splatoon 2, if I'm remembering correctly. So it was really cool to kind of pick things back up and get going again. It was also really fun seeing the Splatoon community kind of just be completely revived, or at least somewhat revived, over the weekend. I saw quite a few people in my friends list were playing, and lots of really great comments on social media, and even seeing those like drawn pictures that you can share within Splatoon itself. So it was really quite fun to have that experience again. Though it being the first Splatfest before the game releases, it came with a whole bunch of limitations to the Splatfest itself. You were only given a handful of weapon choices. It was most of the weapon types that are available in the final game. They were all unlocked for you, but there was only one of that weapon with one sub-weapon type. So honestly, it was kind of difficult to play what I was interested in doing. I'm more of a splattershot pro guy with like bombs, and they only gave me the item that lets you seek out where players are located. Anyway, it was just a bit of a mismatch for me when it came to how I like to play for this very first Splatfest, and there just wasn't a ton of customization to really figure things out. But for a free demo, it worked really well. It was fun being able to play, fun being able to pick Team Rock, and just honestly really kind of enjoy having a fun time playing Splatoon. I don't know if you played the Splatfest at all, Jordan.
No, I didn't. I honestly typically stay away from demos from games.
I mean, given the experience, it was fun, but I mean, I can see why you'd want to stay away from a Splatoon demo. But yeah, I mean, did you have any other questions about it? I guess I could talk a little bit about maybe how I perceive some of the visuals in the game and some of the technical stuff. If that's
so
okay with you or whatever.
Was it running well, I guess, is my first question. Like, that's the first thought that comes to my mind now with Switch games, because the Switch is starting to feel kind of old, even with Nintendo internal games at this point.
Yeah, so the strange thing about Splatoon 3 is that visually, it looks a lot like Splatoon 2. There aren't really any major changes, at least to like the actual ranked battles when it comes to visual performance. So I didn't really notice any dips or whatever. The game felt like it was running very smoothly. I did not pay enough attention to notice if it was 30 or 60 FPS. But one thing that's really interesting about Splatoon 3 is that according to a data mine of the demo, it appears to support AMD's upscaling technology. I believe it's called the AMD Fidelity FX Super Resolution, which is such a very long-winded name to mean that the game renders at like a much lower resolution, you know, potentially 480p. But then this technology can use hardware acceleration to upscale it to 720 or even 180p, and it looks pretty good with pretty good smoothing. And honestly, it looked really quite good if that's how they're actually handling it and getting past the limitations that the Switch hardware provides. I think more Nintendo games should do that. But I will say that It was kind of disappointing going, I guess, 5 years since Splatoon 2 to see not a huge visual improvement between the games. Though from a performance standpoint, I think it was fine.
Okay. So I don't remember. Was Splatoon 2 like consistently like a pretty steady 60 frames per second?
It was, especially with the like online modes. There might have been some stuttering due to like inter-console communication since they don't use a dedicated server, but I don't remember ever seeing any ridiculous drops, especially while playing the ranked modes. I think that's one of the keys to their kind of somewhat smaller stage design and only having like 8 total players.
All right. So it was just a Splatfest that was for the demo.
Yeah.
You can't play any of the other modes.
No, not a single one. And I was kind of disappointed with that. But it was Splatfest. During Splatfest weekends, the main game actually even locks off the ranked modes in Splatoon 2 and even Splatoon 1 so that everybody's just playing Splatfest. So, I mean, it felt true to the Splatfest form, but I really wish that I could have seen how some of the other modes play during this demo.
I will say, like, what you just said there makes me really nervous because that was, like, the thing I disliked the most about Splatoon and Splatoon 2. Just how they would like try and force you to play certain modes at their whim rather than at however you wanted to play at the time.
Yeah, it makes me nervous, especially for Salmon Run.
Yeah, Salmon Run's the big one because like Salmon Run is my favorite way to play Splatoon. If Salmon Run was just open all the time, I would get this game. Like that alone would be a big enough improvement to actually make the game worth it for me.
I mean, it's possible that Salmon Run is a global always-on thing, but Splatfest is always just like the exception to the rule where they literally like close off the entirety of like the area. It enters into a Splatfest mode where the visuals are different, there are different set pieces, the idols are out playing, the characters interact differently with the world around them. And even in the shops, they'll like have fancy lights going on inside. And the only real things that you can do are do Splatfest itself or play through the single player content. So, I mean, it's hard to say at this point if Splatoon 3 is going to lock off Salmon Run. I don't have high hopes because knowing Nintendo and how they run things, they'll probably keep it the same. But I hope not.
Yeah, my two biggest issues with Splatoon 2, well, three biggest issues. I didn't like that Salmon Run was locked away. I wanted to be able to play it at my whim. I did not like being taken out of the game to sit and watch a cutscene of the like presenters talking over and over again about things I just do not care about. Every time you went to the home menu of the Switch and then came back into the game, it would force you to sit through that cutscene again. That was really painful. And then the third one was the like menus for online were really wonky. Especially if you wanted to play with friends. Like you had to jump through some serious hoops to get into the same party as a friend.
Yeah. So I know for sure that your last two problems actually are resolved in Splatoon 3.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So the whole cutscene at the very beginning of when you boot up the game is actually optional now. Instead of having to sit there and watch them, you can actually skip. I think there might be a couple of instances where it's unskippable, like when they're announcing the next Splatfest or the results of a Splatfest. But on a general day-to-day basis, you totally can because they actually showed off in the direct the idols giving you the new battle rotations and maps up in the top corner as if you were getting like a live text feed instead of just actually watching the whole cutscene. So at least that one is fixed in that regard. And then your other issue regarding online play and the menus, the whole ranked system, well, not even ranked system, but the online battle system is honestly way more streamlined. It's actually connected into the practice area, and it's just so easy to cycle through the different options and choose what type of battle you want to do. And we saw, at least in the direct, I didn't play with any friends, so I didn't try connecting with any friends. But at least in the direct, I noticed that one of the ranked modes actually has being able to queue up with at least one, maybe a whole party of people. And so that process actually looked very like normal and streamlined rather than really wonky to navigate.
So it sounds like Nintendo, or at least the Splatoon team, paid a little bit of attention to their fans.
Yeah.
And the complaints. I don't want to say like they went full out and like did everything we wanted, but it sounds like they hit the major points that a lot of people were having issues with.
Yeah, it sure seems like it, for sure. Regarding the Splatfest, though, I mean, I did have fun, and I kind of mentioned some of my thoughts about that. Given that it was a demo, it was kind of boring to not be able to choose any of the other ranked modes, even if it was for like an extra day beforehand, being able to just see the changes that they've made to ranked modes. I mean, one of the big ones, if any of you care about Splatoon, is that they changed the number of clams that you need in Clam Blitz to create like the footballs. And so it's going to change up the meta immensely. And anyway, I wanted to kind of give some of those a feel before I really got into the game. But all of those modes were totally locked, so couldn't play any of the ranked modes. One other thing that I was really itching to figure out was, you know, play through maybe one or two levels of the single player content to get a better feel for how the game controls. The introduction tutorial to the game was fine, and I really didn't have any problems with it. But it when I got into an actual Splatfest, I was like, how do I play this game again? And I just felt like I was just thrown right into a battle. I mean, I could have played around more in the training area, shooting some things, but it was just like, oh no, what have I done? Just hopping right in. Other than that, though, it really was a really fun experience. I really like the new idols. I forget the name of their group. But it's cool that there are now three of them instead of just two. So Splatfest having three different sides is fun, which also led to some of the more interesting mechanics in Splatfest, where you can actually do 2v1 team battles in Splatfest, which is way more chaotic and needs a serious balance rework, which the Splatoon team actually promised like this week that they're going to be adjusting some balance, especially in that mode. But it was just still so fun and so different.
What do they mean by 2v1? There's two teams against you, or?
Yeah, so at some point during the Splatfest, there are ways where the battles can be the two losing teams versus the winning team. And so they have them like gang up on you, which is kind of fun. I can't remember how many total players there were. I think it's they like spawn you in the middle if you're the winning team, so it's much easier for you to get flanked and taken out, and so it's just a way to make you lose points.
It's not a three team free for all.
No, it's more like, let's see if the winning team can hold their own against the other two losing teams or something.
I don't know how I feel about that, because I don't think Splatoon has enough like wiggle room for you to be able to handle two teams as one team. Like,
yeah,
that's so much more. They have so many more resources than you.
Right. I have to double check the total number of players, because I don't think it was, I can't remember what it actually was, how many. But that's one of the reasons why they said that they were going to handle balancing issues, because it was apparently a monster.
That sounds like it's just a nice way for the losing teams to get some revenge on the winning teams by just curb stomping them.
Yeah.
I don't know how the winning team is ever going to walk away with that.
I don't know either. I mean, Rock ended up winning, and that was the team I chose. So I felt pretty good that my 2 hours of playing contributed somewhat.
So this one was a Splatfest where there is three different teams, though.
Yes. So it was Rock versus Paper versus Scissors.
And it would just like pair everyone up, and then hopefully it would be an even amount of games, and then whoever had the most wins was the winning team of the Splatfest, and got just destroyed by the other two when they teamed up on them.
I assume so. Though it's really hard to know how they're balancing getting points versus wins. Because it's like, if there are only two large teams and the third team is much smaller, then like, what kind of balancing do they do to account for that, if they even do? I don't know.
I am a bit disappointed with this, though, because like, when they were showing it off in the direct, for some reason, I thought it was three team free for all. And that was kind of exciting. This doesn't seem like as fun as a free for all could have been.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. I didn't do too many of those battles, so I might be mistaken on some of the details there. But I did have a really good time playing the Splatfest. I really did.
Okay.
But I really want to play the full game now, because like I said, one of the big draws for me for Splatoon is like the single player content, especially after Octo Expansion came out and they really upped their puzzle solving game and their like technical mastery game in those single player levels. Like that stuff kept me entertained and engaged for so many hours. Like I'm just really excited to see what the single player campaign is like in this game. So kind of a bummer I didn't get to really experience any of that during this demo. But hey, comes out in what, a week, 2 weeks? I don't remember.
I believe it's the 9th, if I remember
right. Okay, so a week from the recording.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, yeah, 8 days from the recording. So it should be next Friday.
Yes. Yes. I believe you're right. So anyway, I don't know if there's much else to say about the Splatfest. I do know that a lot of the kind of pro scene that I have kind of kept in my back pocket for a while, I was really interested in like the Splatoon 2 meta several years ago, probably around year two that it came out. I've watched a lot of streams of especially like that SRB2 dude who's really good at the game, and just kind of watching some of their content both before and after the Splatfest. They were actually very pleased with the game. Apparently there have been some technical changes been under the hood when it comes to like the controls of the game and the latency, and the game is much tighter and much more responsive than 2 was. Apparently it's not as good as how responsive 1 was. And I'm not sure how that works, but they're very pleased with where Splatoon 3 is going. I know a lot of these content creators even got to get their hands on an alpha build of the game a couple of weeks ago and got to play some of the ranked battles and were very impressed with what they saw. And so it might just be their bias as professional Splatoon players, but given their actual excitement for the game when they were really upset with how little love Splatoon got in the last 2 years or 3 years, I guess, it was really heartening to see them actually, you know, come out and say that they're very excited for the future of the game.
Okay. So does this feel like it's going to be a game that's not complete at release? Because Nintendo seems to be kind of going down that route with a lot of their games, especially with the Splatoon series and Animal Crossing.
And this team particular is well known.
Yeah. Well, this team particularly at Nintendo is well known for not really finishing the games and then they finish it in post.
Yeah. I don't know. It's too early to say, but I will say that since so much is returning from Splatoon 2, the game will feel full. Whether or not it feels full of new things is honestly an entirely different question, I think.
I'm waiting for them to like drop something that will anger fans. Like day of release, they say, oh, by the way, Salmon Rung's not coming out for another month.
Oh my gosh. You'd cancel any sort of order you had. I don't know if you have it pre-ordered, but you definitely
that's the kind of thing I expect out of this team at this point, though. I'm sorry.
I know. And honestly, like thinking back to Animal Crossing, in a lot of ways, Animal Crossing still feels somewhat empty compared to past Animal Crossing titles. You know, even though we had so much fun with the game and it like kind of changed the world because it hit us at the beginning of the pandemic, I don't know, it still feels somewhat empty because there's not as much actual talking content. Like all of your animals say the same thing. And so it makes me worried looking at that Animal Crossing that we got just a couple years ago and the same team is on Splatoon 3. Yeah, I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah. I am excited for that card game, as I am a huge fan of card games.
Yeah, I was going to actually point that out. Like, I think that there are probably going to be some people that are level one in online battles, but have like 500 hours in the game because they only play the card game.
Well, that's assuming that it's available at all times.
True. Very true.
You can only play it on Monday mornings.
When everyone has to go back to work. Oh, like, could you imagine if they did that?
I can, actually, yeah.
But I feel like the card game could just be something that they're actually just running all the time because it's just a two-person game.
Yeah, it's just a two-person thing. It's easy to do a peer-to-peer connection for that. It's like, you do not need any server work to manage a card game like that.
Yeah.
Should be a fine, casual thing.
Watch, that's going to be the thing that's not available day one.
Oh, my. Something's not going to be available day one. I am calling it. Like, something they have promised is not going to be available for at least a week or something.
Actually, we need to finish the single player content. It's not going to come for a month.
I don't think they'll do that with the single player. I think single player and the main competitive modes are like the bread and butter of Splatoon.
Yeah,
and
I so agree.
They're just going, those two things will be at launch. Obviously, it's going to be like there's going to be a much smaller selection of items and gear and stuff at the beginning. It will feel pretty lackluster in that regard compared to Splatoon 2, probably for the first few months. And then I'm just hoping to God that that Salmon Run is available day one and is never locked behind a time wall.
Yeah. Though I will say one interesting thing that I don't think too many people are really talking about is that save data from Splatoon 3 can be, or excuse me, from Splatoon 2 can be transferred into 3.
Oh, really? So is it possible that all the gear from Splatoon 2 is just being ported over?
Ported over, I believe so. Like, it seemed like a lot of that stuff was going. Though I think all of your weapons and some of your gear will indeed reset. It doesn't seem like it's a full transfer, like it's, you know, 2 just magically fits right into 3. It seems to be like quite a few bonuses, especially like getting these gold Sheldon licenses so that you can unlock some main weapons immediately, regardless of your level. And then you'll also be able to join the ranked battles immediately as well. Like, those are kind of the big things that seem to be bonuses for having Splatoon 2 save data on your console.
So is this running on the same engine as Splatoon 2, or did they build it from the ground up?
I don't think they built it from the ground up. The game feels too similar, at least from my somewhat experienced hands, though it seems like they did rework and upgrade quite a few of the systems. So from a technical standpoint, it is an improvement, but I don't know, honestly, if it's the same engine or not.
All right. Well, so I guess that kind of goes into the next thing that we wanted to talk about. Does this warrant a sequel? So it's on the same engine, which is fine. Do you believe that there's enough content here that's different from Splatoon 2 to be another sequel rather than a DLC pack or something like that?
Oh, that's so hard. This is such a hard game to make that kind of a justification for. When it came to Splatoon 1 to Splatoon 2, yes, I think that there were enough improvements and enough changes that Splatoon 2 just made sense, especially since they had to move it over to a whole different console. But when it comes to Splatoon 2 to Splatoon 3, honestly, I think that's going to really depend on how much new stuff they actually throw into the game. I mean, I'm always, you know, I said this earlier in the episode that I think that one of the biggest draws to a new Splatoon game is the single player campaign. And I'm really hoping that that campaign really delivers and is nice and long and a really fun time, and that that will justify it being a sequel on its own. When it comes to like ranked battles and stuff, that's much harder, because at that point, why wasn't this just like some sort of content update to Splatoon 2? You know, so does it warrant the whole sequel? I don't know. Like, I can see Splatoon 2 having a sequel, but I haven't played enough of 3 to say that it really is a sequel, if that makes sense.
And this seems to be a pretty common like criticism or topic of conversation online right now. It seems like there is a large group of people who only play multiplayer. They're not too interested in the single player, and Nintendo has done a bad job at communicating why this game needs to be an entirely new sequel and why it's worth $60. Not that I'm not saying like it doesn't or it's not there. It's just Nintendo seems to have not communicated it very well.
Communication is honestly one of the things that Nintendo just struggles at the most, I think, when it comes to so many of their properties.
Yeah, I don't understand Nintendo's marketing team. From a casual perspective, I'm pretty casual with Splatoon. I like the single player, but I don't like it enough to have bought the DLC for Splatoon 2. But I do think I'll probably end up getting Splatoon 3. And so I imagine that's kind of what they're going for. if they were just to do another DLC pack, I imagine it would have had fewer sales than the previous DLC pack. Is every single like iteration of the current game is going to have diminishing returns on like the amount of people buying it. And then like when you say, oh, but it's like a brand new version, like sparkly new toy, then you're going to draw in more crowds. So from Nintendo's perspective, I get it, but I do feel like I need a bit more. I need to play the game. I need to actually sit down and play through the game. But unfortunately, once you play through the game, you can't like then decide if you're going to buy it.
Right, because you've already bought it. And Splatoon is one of those games where you honestly need to try so many different modes and parts of the game to really get a feel for how much it is. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still have it pre-ordered. I'm definitely going to get it. I love Splatoon enough that I think it's worth it in my mind. But I know there's a significant number of people that really are like, yeah, I don't think it's worth it until I see more.
I think I'll get it as well. I really liked Splatoon 2's launch. It was a lot of fun when it was like fresh and the community was actually active in the game. And you know what? I'll leave it to Nintendo. I'll leave it to Nintendo. If Salmon Run is available all the time, I'll get the game. If it's not, then I'm not.
Ooh, that's... I can see going either way.
I'll let Nintendo make my decision for me.
Yeah, because they're listening to this episode right now.
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah, they're a week like before it comes hovering out. Above the two buttons right now of what to do with Salmon Run, and then this podcast will influence their decision.
I mean, who knows? Maybe there's an answer out there. Maybe somebody's already like said, "Oh, Nintendo clarified on their website that it's available all the time." Maybe I should do a search real fast for that. Oh, Jordan, I just looked it up. Congratulations, you're buying the game. According to the Splatoon website, Splatoon 3's Salmon Run mode is available anytime.
Oh, wonderful. All right.
That's all three of your concerns addressed.
Okay, yeah. They listened to my Splatoon 2 review back in the day.
That was so long ago. I think you had the exact same three concerns, too.
I did, yeah. I think I gave it a 6 out of 10, and it was like, if they just like solved these like three main problems, I'd bump it up to an 8 or something. But I just didn't like not being able to play the game how I wanted to play the game.
Yeah.
And just being constantly interrupted.
That's one of the hardest things about video games right now that are based heavily in online content. And this could honestly be like a very long discussion, so I don't want this to go on forever. But when it comes to like loving something that is primarily online, you really are at the mercy of the company that made the game. You know, Overwatch is a game that I honestly play quite a bit still because I just think it's kind of fun to boot up. I tend to play some of the more arcadey modes rather than the ranked modes because that game is toxic as heck. But
it's a Blizzard multiplayer game.
Yeah.
They get toxic.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty bad. But I still have a lot of fun. I think the characters are really fun to play, and it's just a fun little shooting experience that I can just play to kind of wind down a little bit, especially in the arcade modes. But anyway, they're going to suffer from a very large problem in like 2 months when Overwatch 2 launches. See, that's the problem.
Oh, I was going to say, Overwatch over there just quaking their boots for Splatoon launch.
I know. Ooh. But they're going to have a problem with Overwatch 2 because they have explicitly said that Overwatch 2 overrides Overwatch 1. So they're going to make all sorts of changes across the board when it comes to how heroes interact, how the game actually works, the formats of the games themselves. Like, they're switching from 6v6 play to 5v5 play, and they're reworking some of the community's, I wouldn't say favorite characters, but there's definitely like a subset of community that loves playing one of the heroes named Doomfist. He's an incredibly broken movement-based character that I absolutely hate playing against. But a lot of people love playing him because in custom game modes, they've created parkour maps for him. And so there's this huge community that is going to be playing him as much as they can before Overwatch 2 launches because they've reworked his character entirely in Overwatch 2. And that goes back to the original point where it's like, when these game studios for online-based games change too much, you lose a significant amount of interest from your player base when there's no way to go back to that original content. And I guess in some ways we're kind of lucky that Splatoon 2 will kind of coexist with Splatoon 3. So if the hardcore community really wants to do any sort of like tournaments or play with their friends in Splatoon 2, that content's available. But there are all sorts of games across the industry that are suffering from this monotonous update form that then changes the game and you lose fans along the way.
So I will counter that with another one of Blizzard's games, StarCraft. So when StarCraft 2 came out, you could still keep playing StarCraft 1. And because of that, it created a divide in the player base where you're either a StarCraft 1 fan or a StarCraft 2 fan. And it split the game as well. So,
yeah. And I guess another really good example of the player base being split is actually Minecraft. I don't know if you knew this, but there is a significant number of players that play before the combat rework, and all of their competitive PvP servers and game modes are on an older version of Minecraft, which is probably not that secure to be running on servers, but they run it there, and they have all sorts of members of the modding community patching that version of the game because they hated the new update and a lot of people don't want to go forward. So it happens where either you have to keep your community unified and potentially lose people, or you split them in half.
Like, I would say another one that, like, for like the Nintendo community, when we saw like a game split the community in half, was Brawl's release.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. We're still suffering the repercussions from that.
the Melee group is still there.
they haven't changed. I mean, some of them are playing Ultimate, but their main game is still Melee.
I would say Melee is growing right now, even.
Fair enough, especially since they've added those like patches that let you play online now. So, well, when I say they have added patches, I mean the Melee community, not Nintendo. Nintendo would never.
Yeah. How long... This is a side tangent, but how long do you think until Melee HD comes out that the Melee fans hate?
I don't
know. You know it's going to happen.
I mean, the real question is, are they going to make Melee HD, or are they going to release Melee on the Nintendo Switch Online?
As an online exclusive, like, expansion pack plus.
When they do GameCube games, finally. Pay us another $10 a month just to play GameCube games.
Oh, man. No, I'm waiting for Nintendo to do Melee HD, and then they, like, fix Game & Watch or something and, like, remove wave dashing.
Could you imagine if they removed wave dashing from Melee HD? Nobody would play it. None of the Melee players would.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it would sell like hotcakes, because it would be going back to their childhood. Like, oh, I loved Melee.
Especially if they added like five characters to the game, too.
Yeah, like any planned ones, like Banjo, you know, because we know that he was going to be there. And
Snake was supposed to be there as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Snake would have been horrendous to fight against in Melee.
Yeah, Melee's projectile system was pretty weird. Anyway,
back to Splatoon. So like this discussion of kind of like splitting user base or player bases, and Splatoon is pretty much an online game. It's kind of interesting in that it's adjacent to a games as a service model, or like I don't want to say free to play, because I don't think it would be truly free to play, but it's kind of like a games as a service, but instead of like a giant patch updates, like new versions out or something, just download the version and pay $20 or something, they lock it behind a $60 game, and it's a completely different online environment, and then they shut down the servers of the previous game.
Yeah, it's a weird model. I think it'll work very well for them monetarily, because Japan is obsessed with Splatoon, and there is a good player base elsewhere. But in today's environment in video games, it's, you just have to ask the question, is this the right direction for Splatoon to go? Especially since we talked about, is Splatoon 3 even really worthy of being called a sequel?
It feels like a major patch update.
Honestly, it really does. A major patch update with a significant amount of single player content added for like story reasons.
And like they could have just made like this is a major patch update for $20. And then there's also a single player campaign for another $20 or something. But this way they get the full $60. So I guess why would they listen to us on this? Clearly they know what they're doing to get money.
I know, but if you also have to wonder, like if they were going to continue a Splatoon 2 and use that like DLC type model, then they would get the $60 for Splatoon 2, the base game, and then $20 for DLC for the people that want the DLC. So that it's $80 at that point. I don't know. It's just so weird, especially since we are on year 5 of the Switch. And, you know, rumors continue to pop up that are like, oh, the Switch 2 or the Switch successor is on its way soon. And we get all of these, you know, feelings and reviews. You know, Jordan and I, you know, we talk all the time about how the Switch is so underpowered compared to so many other systems now. It's a 6-year-old piece of technology because, let's face it, it's a chip from 2016. And it was for a mobile processor, and it served the Switch well, but it is really showing its age. And it's really weird to me that they didn't just update Splatoon 2 and save Splatoon 3 for the next Switch.
Yeah, especially since, so like, I recently got the Steam Deck, and it is so nice, not only just because it's like way more powerful than the Switch, but it immediately came with like this enormous library of games because it's directly tied to my Steam account that I have the ability to do cloud save between the PC, and I don't have to pay any money to play online on my Steam Deck. It's free. And it's not like the Steam Deck's that much more expensive than a Switch is, especially like a Switch OLED.
Yeah, which I actually bought the Splatoon 3 Switch OLED.
Yeah. The Switch OLED is about $300. What is the lowest like Steam Deck? $350? $400. So
a little bit more, but the convenience you get out of it, like for that $100.
Oh man, my favorite thing with the Steam Deck is that cloud save feature. Being able to just like play on my PC and then just close my game and then pull up my Steam Deck and then immediately start playing on the Steam Deck and then go out on the train. Without like hiccup on my game, and then when I come back home, then jump back on my PC. It's so nice. It's like it's like a gamer's direction of the Switch. But
yeah, contrast that with even having multiple Switches, like I do. If I want to play and pick up a Switch game on one of my other Switches on my same save file and same profile, I have to go into the Switch settings and transfer the data myself. Not that I do it that often, but sometimes I do swap my like Pokemon saves across different Switches as I'm using them for different things. Because I have 3 Switches now because I apparently don't care. I will say, though, the Switch OLED is a huge upgrade just from the screen standpoint. I wish it had more power, but like I can already see such a huge difference in the games I play, especially Xenoblade. I can actually see the game on my Switch screen when I play Xenoblade 3. But anyway, that's a totally different aside. I do agree, though, like it's just insane how much better the Steam Deck is compared to the Switch. And we still don't have any sort of official news that the Switch is going to get an upgrade soon.
Yeah. And on top of that, when we do get the upgrade, I'm not expecting it to be more powerful than the Steam Deck is.
No, there's no way they'd do that.
But it will be like considerably more cheaper than the Steam Deck. I imagine it'll probably launch around 200, 250 again.
Okay.
Maybe 300. Maybe they'll stick at that 300 number and then it like comes with an OLED screen this time.
Please, please, please.
Actually, that does like raise a big question. Now that there is the Switch OLED out and like they've kind of corrupted their fans into wanting OLED screens, they can't really launch the next Switch system out without an OLED, right?
Yeah, honestly, I never want to go back to the ugly screens on my other 2 Switches. Those 2 Switches are going to be like docked Switches only for the rest of their lives.
I think Nintendo opened a Pandora's box that they weren't like anticipating, because now any successor they release is going to be immediately compared to the OLED Switch.
Oh, for sure. Because the OLED Switch, even though it's still like 720p, it honestly looks so good because of the OLED screen being able to handle the color contrasting. It's amazing. The games don't look like they're 720p. And I've only had it for like 3 days. It's crazy to me. Like, I cannot believe that the upgrade of the screen has made the Switch that much more enjoyable on handheld.
Yeah, I kind of want to get an OLED, but I was kind of hoping that a Pro would come out.
Yeah, by this
anyway, point. Yeah, at this point. That's our like daily rant about how we need a new Switch model soon. This is a really long generation for Nintendo, but there's probably some like worldwide issues kind of causing that.
Yeah.
If the pandemic didn't happen, like, would the Switch successor have come out at the traditional 5-year mark, do you think?
I think so. Considering how much of a slowdown we got across the compute industry because of the silicon shortage during the pandemic, I think that at least the Switch console would be the next generation up. I don't think about general compute that way. I think that, you know, Intel and AMD and NVIDIA, all of their like CPUs and GPUs and all that stuff, their schedules would probably be unaffected because they tend to plan things out way in advance. But when it comes to the Switch as a consumer piece of hardware, yes, I do believe that we would have had the Switch Pro by now if it were not for the pandemic and the silicon shortage.
Yeah, I'm going to say something controversial that's kind of contradicting what I said earlier. I think Nintendo is sitting and waiting to watch the situation of silicon and like supply chains, and they're not going to pull the trigger until they are confident that they can launch a system at $300.
Yeah.
So they might not even hit next year. That might be why Zelda 2 hasn't like said that it's going to be on the Switch 2 yet, or why they haven't even like mentioned a successor to the Switch yet.
And you know, they might also be watching actual international markets because of all of the inflation that's been happening recently as well.
Well, like PlayStation just increased the MSRP on the PS5.
Yeah. No, I think you've got a really good point there. It probably is a global machination. I can't see why they wouldn't, but they must have a Switch successor like internally ready to go for, you know, when they want to put it on the actual assembly line and whatnot and actually purchase everything. I cannot see Nintendo going this long into the Switch's cycle without having the successor at least planned
Yeah, but those plans also kind of make me a bit concerned, because when we finally get the new Switch, then is it going to be running on 2020 hardware in 2023?
Maybe they're upgrading it as they go. At least I hope. The white sheet internally is just constantly accounting for the next generation of NVIDIA chip or whatever they're going to put in it.
It'll be interesting. I think Nintendo really likes that like $200 to $300 price mark. I think they launched the Wii U a bit too high, and they're a bit too nervous to ever like exceed what the Wii U launched at. What was the? I remember it being like $350 or something.
No, the Wii U launch apparently was only $300.
It was $300. Okay,
but the better one was $350. Only had 8 gigabyte models. The 32 gigabyte models were $350.
Oh man, that was such a bad deal.
Yeah.
That is not a lot of memory. You could get SD cards that, oh, come on, Nintendo.
You can quadruple the the SSD on the inside for only
a PS5 has 500 gigs and I am already out of memory.
What are you talking about? That Nintendo has that much. I'm just kidding. I still can't believe that the Switch OLED is only 64 gigabytes. Like, come on, Nintendo. That was the one thing that I was like, I still have to get an SD card for my Switch. Anyway,
I think they put a lot of effort in like just hitting that exact $300 price point.
Yeah,
they just do not want to go above $300.
Or $350 in the case of the OLED.
Oh, is it $350?
Yeah.
Oh no. It's only $50 cheaper than a Steam Deck. Whew.
Yeah, the Switch OLED is $350. I honestly thought that they were going to lower the regular Switch down to $250 and then have the OLED be $300. But nope, they didn't do that. Yeah, no, I just looked it up. The OLED is $350. The Switch OLED for Splatoon 3, though, that was $360 because it was themed.
At $350, it is now in like competitive price range with both the Steam Deck and the PS5. Because both of those are $400.
Jordan, stop spouting nonsense. Come on. We're Nintendo fans here.
I am just surprised that Nintendo had the gall to like, oh, man.
Hey, the OLED screen is worth $50 more than a regular screen. What can I say?
Yeah. I guess Nintendo just lucked out in that Steam Deck and PS5 aren't available in stores. But I think they need to hit that $300 price mark. Because the PS5 will be in stores by the time the Switch 2 does come out.
Yep. A lot of the silicon shortages are starting to resolve somewhat, even though we do have inflation and it is still a little tight. They are recovering. You can actually see that with the GPU pricing for the 30 series model of NVIDIA cards.
Yeah. Well, the GPU prices, the bottom fell out in that market.
Yeah. Plus, people are now waiting for the 40 series, which...
That's well, so it sounds like they're delaying the 40 series a year.
Yeah, because of the complete overstocking of the 30 series, because it took so long to bring them to market in full force, I mean.
So the electronics industry is just kind of in a bit of a mess right now, and it's probably going to be at least another year before things start getting resolved. I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo doesn't launch the Switch 2 till 2024 at this point.
Yeah. I know we said earlier this year that we were really hoping for some sort of announcement this year or early next year, but just watching the trends, it seems highly unlikely.
We do know Nintendo is starting to stockpile materials, and like their president was being coy about whether or not there would be one announced within this fiscal year, which means anywhere up till March. But I don't even think Nintendo knows the answer yet.
Yeah, they probably don't. Which is probably why they decided to just let us have Splatoon 3 and why Zelda is now going to be in March.
Well, I think Zelda, it was like, it's Zelda issue. I think it was just Zelda.
I do agree with that. But if they were kind of taking advantage of it being a Zelda issue to save for a potential new console, like when they were planning out this year or something, or at least planning out where are we going into the next year, I don't know. I think that's possible anyway. But... all that to say, I think that this is all of these tangents have really kind of shown some of the issues that a lot of people have with Splatoon 3, where like, yeah, it's weird that we're getting a sequel to Splatoon 2 on the same console as Splatoon 2 when the console is so old. We're all very curious about like why Nintendo hasn't tried to shift to a more game as a service approach, like whether they have a battle pass for Splatoon where they have all sorts of new content that way or just additional DLC. It's just weird that I have to say, I'm saying it's just weird, but honestly, this is kind of par for the course for Nintendo. I'm not gonna lie, like leave it to them to do something like this. But anyway, I don't know what else to really kind of say other than I really hope that Splatoon 3 kind of hits all of the marks. I am looking forward to it. And I'm really hoping that the single player stuff is significant and really fun, because I think Splatoon lore is really fascinating, even if there's not a ton of it.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'll get it. I'll have fun.
Well, you have to now because they are doing Salmon Run 24/7.
But yeah, I will say if Splatoon were to like move to a free-to-play model, they would make insane amount of money.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they'd make more money, honestly.
Yeah, but I don't know if Nintendo's into that more predatory. And I say predatory not as like a derogatory form in this way, but predatory as in it's actually feeding off of a lot of psychology and research that has gone into video games as like a much more... manipulable thing for people to spend money on.
They delve into a lot of the psychology research done for gambling addictions.
Yes,
and stuff.
And a lot of it is very similar to how free-to-play games work and mobile games.
I mean, Nintendo, they already did this with like Fire Emblem Three Houses and stuff. I don't think they're that above doing it. Maybe not on their like home machine that is their main identity. Like on the Three Houses.
Warriors, whatever the mobile game was called.
Yeah, I forget. Heroes.
Was it just Fire Emblem Heroes? Yeah.
Yeah. With it being on the mobile, whatever, and like Fire Emblem's not the face of Nintendo, it typically is one of like the B tier franchises at Nintendo. Yeah. Whereas Splatoon is it's a double multi-million property. It sold over 10 million copies. So it's at least A tier. If this was 10 years ago, it'd be S tier, but S tier now of Nintendo is like gangbusters.
Right. And it's an in-house top seller too. You know, Pokemon is like a Nintendo property because Nintendo owns a significant amount of Pokemon, but like Game Freak still has an enormous amount of autonomy, and the Pokemon Company International also has autonomy. So even though Pokemon is definitely like the biggest of all of Nintendo's franchises from a pure money standpoint, the like real three pillars of Nintendo right now, if you don't include Pokemon, are Mario, Splatoon, and Zelda.
Mm-hmm. I would say the three pillars are Mario, Mario, and Zelda.
What, for Smash Bros or what?
Mario Kart. Oh, Mario Kart's the biggest property they own.
I bundle Mario Kart into Mario because it's part of the Mario brand.
Yeah. But even then, so Pokemon, I guess they're not technically part of Nintendo. They are the biggest like money earner out of Nintendo, but yes. It's not from the games. I believe Mario still makes more money off the games alone.
Right, because Pokemon typically gets a lot more of its money from merchandise sales. And I guess if you bundle the trading card game into merchandise sales, as well as quite a few of their more mobile free to play games, like Pokemon Go has raked in like $1 billion consistently every year or something ridiculous. I mean, Niantic takes a huge cut of that, but
yeah, I would say Nintendo's three pillars are Mario, Zelda, and the team that makes Animal Crossing and Splatoon is kind of cheating.
Yeah.
I would kind of combine the two together because they sell roughly around, well, the new Animal Crossing sold insane amounts, but typically Animal Crossing sells around the same as Splatoon.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with that. I think that those are our three pillars that we can agree on for sure. Though in Japan, I'd say Splatoon probably edges out Animal Crossing.
Yeah. Does it?
Maybe not.
Because like, the new Animal Crossing sold a lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, never mind. I take that back. Animal Crossing had 10 million sales in Japan alone, and apparently Splatoon 3 has 2 million in Japan. So I was wrong by a factor of 5.
Yeah. Animal Crossing was absolutely insane. I think if I remember right, it was like 30 million-ish. It hit above 30 million.
Yeah, which is crazy. Total,
which is insane.
And it also sold a ton of consoles because not a lot of people had Switches at the beginning of the pandemic when Animal Crossing came out.
My mom owns an Animal Crossing Switch now, and she doesn't even play games. So that's how much reach it had.
Yeah, okay. So Animal Crossing is probably more of a pillar than Splatoon. But definitely that studio does amazing things for Nintendo. So anyway, we've kind of jumped around on quite a few topics, but I think that all of it was pretty important in kind of talking about the context of Splatoon 3, don't you think?
Yeah.
So here's hoping. I mean, we're both hoping that the game is amazing and is worth being a sequel. But as it stands, like, yeah, it's still Splatoon at its heart, you know? So we'll see. We'll do a whole review episode, I think, as well. I mean, if we have an amazing time with it and have a lot to say, it'll be a whole episode. If not, it'll be half of an episode, I guess.
A 5-minute review.
5-minute review. It's Splatoon. I have a lot of fun with it, but yeah, I don't know. That could be the whole episode. Anyway, were there any other questions or thoughts you had about Splatoon 3 or anything, Jordan?
I think I'm good.
All right. All that said, thank you for sticking with us for this episode of the Nintendo Fusion Podcast. We really appreciate you as our wonderful, amazing listener. If you have enjoyed the episode and are enjoying our conversations, please be sure to give us a like on YouTube or leave a review on whatever podcasting app that you found us on. Doing so will feed the hungry, hungry algorithm and help other people find the show and help us reach them so that, you know, we can have more fun talking about this stuff with all of you. And if you want to talk directly with us about Nintendo stuff, whether it be Splatoon 3 and how we're completely wrong about our opinions here, you can check out our Discord server at discord.com. No, sorry, you don't want to go to discord.com. You want to go to nintendofusion.com/discord. That will link you directly to our Discord server where you can talk with us about anything Nintendo if you want. With all that said, thanks again for joining us, and I guess we'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks. Bye-bye.
See ya.